Well, it's great to be here. It's great to be here filling in for my friend Paul W. I absolutely love it. And I love being here at the Detroit Auto Show. And here's, Mike, I don't know if you recognize this. Here's what I love about Media Days. I love that everybody comes and is like, they're hands-on. They are in these vehicles,
right,
pulling on things, pulling on levers, flipping switches, hitting buttons. And then you've got everybody coming back behind them that are cleaning everything up, making sure everything looks spiffy. But that's what this is for.
Right,
it's to show the public what these vehicles are capable
of. You got to keep it shiny. You got to keep it interactive.
Yes, and so that when you get here, you're going to see the best of the best, and that's what the Detroit Auto Show is about. And we are here at the Ford display, and you want to talk about the best of the best. The Bronco is a fantastic vehicle, and last night they introduced their new Bronco RTR, which is absolutely fantastic. Jason Hyde, the Bronco brand manager, joins me here to talk about it. It's good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What was, first of all, let's talk about what the process that went into the RTR. And then now the culmination of it being out and about.
Absolutely. So last year we unveiled the Mustang RTR. And if you know the RTR brand, it stands for Ready to Rock. They are deeply rooted in Formula Drift on the track, but they also have chops in the off-road space. And they are a team of racers, Vaughn Gittin Jr., Lauren Healy, who are out racing our Broncos that customers also are driving. And the most harshest conditions in places like Johnson Valley, California, the King of the Hammers, at Baja 1000, they're putting these things through their paces, pushing
yeah.
it to the limits, and that's what's inspiring the confidence in what customers see today.
Well, and it's because you can push them to the limits.
Oh yeah,
it's the way that these, all the work that goes into the everything that they offer, but the technology and all of the different trims, it's unbelievable how this is taken too to then just the general public.
Totally. Yeah, we call it that built wild DNA that's within the spirit of Bronco, you know, and it's that confidence that you get behind the wheel and realizing this thing can go wherever you want it to go.
What separates this from other vehicles kind of in the same segment?
I think one key element is just, you know, some of the technology that we've introduced. Independent front suspension is a game changer in general at high speed off-roading. It just is a cushier ride. So you still retain that comfort, but we have a ton of technology as well in the vehicle that make these things adaptable in any kind of conditions that you throw at it.
How much then do you listen to, because obviously you guys are the professionals, all the engineers, and they know what they're doing, but how much do you listen to then what the customer base wants?
Oh, we're constantly measuring and listening to what the customer has to say. We spend time with them at research panels and interviews and just generally on the trail too, getting out to the off-road parks locally as well as on the other side of the country and just spending time in these places where our customers go and live that lifestyle as well too, just as much. And I think that's where we get a lot of insight out to go into future products as well.
I remember riding on the Bronco Experience here last year, and aside from it, I mean, it is a thrill ride. The way that you have it set up, it's fantastic. But then I remember thinking, okay, aside from, you know, the hills and the uneven terrain, being in these vehicles, you get to see the scope of what they can do. And if you buy one of these cars, you can actually be put through the paces through the experience of a Ford, and they'll tell you how to handle this thing so that when you hit the road, you're ready to go.
That's right. Yeah, what we've got here at the Detroit Auto Show is just a precursor of what we have out in the wild around the country. So the Bronco Mountain, the obstacle course that we have here, you get a chance to run through its paces, get a little light feel of what these vehicles are able to do. But if you buy a Bronco or lease a Bronco, you are eligible to go out for a one-day driving experience at one of our off-roadio locations around the country. We have five, Texas, Las Vegas, New Hampshire, Moab, and it's just like the coolest opportunity to go ride in a Ford vehicle. It's a Bronco that we provide you, and you get out there, learn from the best of the best, the trail guides, in terms of how these vehicles can adapt, and then go home with that confidence to drive your Bronco the way it's intended.
I want to talk a little bit more about the RTR, which was unveiled yesterday. What's different about this one?
This one's really cool in that we've taken a lot of that race-proven technology and brought it in, you know, from our most top-of-the-lineup Raptor inspiration, taking things like the steering gear, the 1,000-watt cooling fan out of those higher levels and bringing it into a more value-driven entry-level price point that now still has that unique style and capability that our customers are going to always know and love.
What is the the development process of a lot of these vehicles, because you know there are, the way that this has changed over the last few years is leaps and bounds. I mean, there's a lot more technology in it now. So what goes into that process?
Yeah, and in the case of the RTR, this is unique where our engineers paired up with the RTR engineers as well, too, and came together in what we found to be the perfect balance of an off-road capable Bronco that still has that style and unique signature element of what the RTR brand is all about. So it was truly an in-house creative effort with some of the best of engineering. And the cool thing is that this is going to be built right here in Michigan at the Michigan Assembly Plant, rolling off the production line with that look and feel.
Yeah, we love that.
Yeah, totally.
And I think this is kind of a microcosm of what we're seeing from Ford right now. Right, obviously the push to the technology and all of that is very obvious. But it's just pushing it a little further.
Yeah.
Every time it feels like. And towards in all the models really. But it feels like that's kind of what Ford's doing right now.
For sure, and we got to keep things fresh, right? So, I mean, the unique thing about a series like the RTR is that it's going to appeal to a younger audience, a younger generation of new off-roaders that are looking to get into the lifestyle, and I think that's something that we continue to push the boundaries on and obviously keep the envelope going forward, making sure we're opening up for anyone who is interested in this kind of lifestyle.
Take the lid off, take the doors off, go for a little cruise.
You got to do
it. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's
nothing better than taking the roof off on a summer day.
Have you done the Moab and all that stuff? Have you been to those places? What
yeah,
do you think?
Yeah, no. The
it's got to be a thrill. I mean, it's got to be unbelievable.
It's the coolest thing you can experience, honestly, in a vehicle or just in general.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the Moab especially is one of my favorites. The off-roadio location there is right along the Colorado River, Red Cliffs Lodge. It's truly gorgeous. And honestly, one time I was out there, they were filming for Yellowstone right down
oh,
the street.
Cool.
So, yeah, you know what kind of environment you're in.
Well, it's absolutely fantastic. And I think what – and especially what we're seeing with the way that the auto shows are going, the fact that people are able to get their hands on it, like I said a little bit ago, I think that's the important part. And these are vehicles that you can buy, right? These are vehicles that are in your price range. And so if you want to get one of these, you can actually test it, feel it for yourself. And I think that's an important part of the idea here, too.
Yeah, you got to come on down and experience it for yourself. I think just spending some time, like you said, getting around the vehicles, sitting in the seat and understanding what that might feel like for you on a day-to-day basis,
yeah.
I think it's a great starting point to determining what that next purchase is for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, certainly. Jason Hyde, the Bronco Brand Manager, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. And enjoy the auto show.
Thank you. You guys
it's fantastic.
As well.
Thank you
it.
So much. What I loved about this is you see the people's faces. It's like you're watching somebody on a roller coaster.
I mean,
and you see the emotion of it.
I mean, that is a steep drop if you are a
yeah.
roller coaster enthusiast.
I'll tell you, it's steeper when you get up there, too.
Yeah.
You look at it from this angle, you're like, oh, this is okay. But once you get up there, it feels even steeper.
I got it. You know,
But that thing feels totally in control the whole time. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's probably a good idea that they have professional drivers because, you know, I'd be wanting to go out and open that thing up, and that'd be no good for anybody.
No, it'd be no good for anybody. We heard that they wanted to buzz us by the wall here because we're right next to it, and it's fantastic. I will say I love the ambiance of it, the smell of the tires.
Yeah.
Just the sound of it adds to the element here.
I mean, it's called the Bronco. It is an experience.
It is.
Yeah.
No, it is. And again, the fact that these shows are changing, it is what it is.
Right.
And I love how Ford is leaning into this. I love it. Because that's the way that you engage with your customer base. It's the way that you're able to show your products off more than just, here's our car.
Right.
Look, it's beautiful, right? You can sit in it and you can feel it. But when you can actually experience it, it's a totally different thing.
I mean, especially if you were thinking of buying a Bronco or an SUV. I mean, what a way to help you make up your mind.
Yeah, certainly. All right, we're going to take a break. We are live here from the Detroit Auto Show here at Ford at their display, which is absolutely fantastic. We'll get you caught up on a couple of news stories. Caitlin Buss, the editorial page editor of the Detroit News, joins us on the other side. It is Focus with Paul W. Smith here on WJR. Also, some news from today here at the Auto Show. The North American Car, Truck, and Utility Vehicle of the Year were announced. NACTOY making the announcement that the Dodge Charger wins Car of the Year. The Truck of the Year goes to the Ford Maverick Lobo, and the Hyundai Palisade taking home the utility vehicle of the year.
What I like about that, two out of the three are our domestic automakers.
Absolutely. I will say, it's crazy. So I go get the mail the other day, right? And I got a Hyundai Palisade, like, pamphlet in the mail. Not a pamphlet. It was like a beautiful, glossy, colorful,
dare you say, brochure.
More than a brochure.
Wow.
It was like a book.
It was literature
of the Honda Palette. Yeah, I was crazy, and I'm thinking, like, that can't be cheap.
Yeah,
it can't be cheap to send these out. So good for all three as they win the North American Car, Truck, and Utility Vehicle of the Year. Meanwhile, there is some serious news. SCOTUS hearing oral arguments yesterday on the issue of transgender athletes playing in, well, specifically transgender girls playing in men's sports in both Idaho and in West Virginia. And it seems like they are going to side with the ban that is already in place.
Right.
So that these student athletes would not be able to play on these teams. Caitlin Buss, the deputy editorial page editor for the Detroit News, has been following it and joins us this afternoon. Caitlin, hi, good to talk with you.
Hey, good to talk with you all. I was there earlier, so I should have stopped by the booth, but I didn't.
You should have stopped by. It would have been nice to see you.
Yeah. What do you
make of what we heard out of the high court yesterday? It seems like they're going to rule on this ban.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, obviously with the numbers that conservatives have anyway, they always had a good chance of this, you know, these bans being upheld. I think we saw some interesting questions from Amy Coney Barrett. And of course, she's been on the sometimes on the chopping block with the MAGA movement. Mm-hmm. But I think she's a good justice. And I think her questions were fair, you know, but all signs point to that these bans will be you know, upheld. And again, you know, in the election, this is an 80-20 issue. I think, you know, what the court has done before this in ruling on this issue has indicated that they support, you know, kind of what Trump has laid out here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do, too. So I think it'll be relatively safe if they do rule that way. And then, you know, of course, this might pop up again in different instances, but it will largely settle, you know, this issue of trans girls in women's sports and how that's been handled at the state level.
Well, and again, just for clarity, this is about these athletes playing in high school sports or mm-hmm. at Boise. This is not about bathrooms. It's not about locker rooms. It's nothing about
right.
that. It is, can they play in these sports? Yes or no. And that's what the Supreme Court is going to rule on.
Sure.
Also, this situation involving these subpoenas with the Clintons, both Bill and Hillary, they've blown them off. They released a lengthy statement saying that, you know, we're not going to participate in this nonsense. I guess then the question is, what next steps is the House going to take in this matter? Are they going to elevate this a little bit?
You know, I think it will be hard for them to push this much farther. I mean, They certainly well might try, and I think they're kind of hell-bent on exposing the Clintons as much as they can. But when you start applying that double standard, and you know, personally, I think Bill has been, you know, really largely implicated in being close to Epstein, and there's a lot of questions more than kind of anyone else who's popped up here. But there are questions about Trump, and so, you know, how far does the House want to push that without Trump feeling more vulnerable on this issue? And I think it's interesting, you know, we don't see reactions from Trump, you know, that often, but he did flick off, you know, someone yesterday over this mm-hmm. issue. And so we know it's still an issue for him, too. So, you know, I don't know how far they'll try and push, you know, the former president, Bill Clinton. But I thought their letter was interesting. I think they realized they could tap into kind of the anger right now and get away with it for the time being.
Well, it almost feels like we're in the zone now where they're going to start making decisions based on what they want to see in the midterms, right? How is this going to benefit them politically? Does it make sense to hold the Clintons in contempt? Like, I just don't know if they want to push that far. I think you let all of this play out. You let it play out in the court of public opinion, and maybe that's enough. But I don't know if it makes sense politically for them to push this thing further.
I don't think so. I think that's right, that everything, you know, from today moving forward is really through the lens of the midterms and how quickly they will come up. And so, you know, Republicans are already very vulnerable. Obviously, things will change, but if the election were held today, you know, it's pretty clear how it would go.
Yeah, yeah. And then this issue isn't going away, right? I mean,
no.
There has been a lot of issues that have arisen, obviously, with Venezuela, but that doesn't mean that the Epstein issue is just going away. It hasn't faded. It is one of those coals on the fire still.
That's right. And it's not going to go away until there is more clarity. I mean, I can't really believe how many years it's already kind of dragged on. But you're absolutely right that these other, you know, distractions, if you want to call them that, won't take away, you know, how much people here care about it.
You know, it's funny because you watch some of the analysis of where the electorate is now. And, you know, the Glenn Gariff Group just did a poll on for the Detroit News showing, like, everything is so tight here in the state, right? But there is still this sentiment that people feel like things are too expensive. Like Donald Trump's version of the economy in year one of the second term hasn't gone the way that they would have liked. And a lot of those voters voted for him. Not to say that what he sees down the pipe isn't going to come to fruition, but all of these issues I think are where they have to stick to, because the Democrats are chomping at the bit. They want to make affordability their issue.
Yeah, I you know, that poll was interesting, and I was looking at it earlier too. And we're in a dead heat almost, you know, across the board. Well, you know, two important races are the governor's and the Senate race. And I think you're seeing a real, you know, I hesitated to say this at first, you know, maybe 6 months ago, but you're seeing a real appetite for independent-minded candidates. And I think the Senate is actually really interesting. A lot of independents are supporting Rogers. That's a good indication for Republicans. You know, that's a healthy sign for them. But I think it speaks to people's appetite for, you know, like you're saying, moderation. The Democrats are going to try and come in and be these moderates. And there's going to be a real competition over that center point again, maybe.
Very interesting stuff. As always, Caitlin, appreciate your thoughts and your perspective on all of these issues. And they're not going away, so we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you got it. Here's another thing, Mike. So you've got administration officials saying that action on Greenland could come weeks, months down the pipe, right? Here's what people aren't talking about on this issue. So the United States has talked about or engaged in conversation to buy Greenland, acquire Greenland in some version in 1867, in 1910, 1946, 1955, 2019, and now 2025. And I guess 2026.
Yeah.
So this is not some new idea.
Yeah, I didn't hear a thing about it in 2019. I wonder how that deal went south.
Of course not. But this idea of, like, Donald Trump being some conqueror.
Yeah.
I don't know if it makes a lot of sense, because this has been happening. This goes back a long time where the United States has looked at this piece of land and go, okay, this might be beneficial for us. But you don't hear that.
Yeah, and I guess it depends on if they do acquire Greenland, how they do it. If they do it via military force, or if they do it by, you know, buying it somehow.
We don't need military fighter jets flying to Denmark.
Right.
So that's a piece of it too. All right, we're taking a break live here from the Detroit Auto Show at the beautiful Ford display. You got to come check it out. We'll come back for more here on WJR. Well, it's good to have you here at the Blue Oval setup here at the Detroit Auto Show. Absolutely fantastic. You're going to see a ton of really, really cool cars with a lot of different capabilities. But what happens if something goes wrong? What if you need a fix? What if, you know, one of the unbelievable pieces of tech needs some tender, loving care? Well, if you don't want to go in, Ford has the ability to come to you. It's their Ford Pro Mobile service, and it's absolutely fantastic. Todd Rayburn is the director of Global CX Implementation and joins us. It's great to see you.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks for the time.
Tell me a little bit about how this came to be, because I think that whenever you're taking the service to your customer, it's a win.
Yeah, so look, one of the things we started this back in 2019 as a small pilot to test out capability, right?
Yeah,
right before the pandemic, right? So a great time to do that. But it was really about how do we differentiate ourselves in the market. And, you know, product's one thing, and we've got a great product lineup. But really providing that experience to our owners that makes it easy and respects their time. It's all about saving time for the customer, right? So we'll come to you. We'll do the service, your driveway, place of work, whatever area is convenient for you. If we can't actually do the service with our van, we offer pickup and delivery. So we'll bring your vehicle back to the store, do the repair in the store, and return it back to you. So all about making it convenient for the customer.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. People are busy, right? They got a million things going on, and you don't want the condition of your vehicle to suffer.
Yeah.
Right? And so if you make that available, I'm sure people take advantage of it all the time.
Yeah, so we've really scaled up over the last 3 years, 9 million events, remote experiences we've done, right? So in 2025, it was 3.8 million. It represents about 16% of our service business today. And we've got, you know, almost 16%.
Wow.
We've got, in the U.S., 4,300 mobile service units in operation around the country to take care of customers. It's the largest fleet in the industry.
It's remarkable. And the dealers are the ones that are manning most of this. How do they like it?
The dealers manage all of it, right?
Yeah.
So that's the great thing, is the partnership we've had with our dealers to scale this up, right? Change is always hard, but our dealers have really leaned into this as a different a differentiator for their dealerships, for the brand in general, and, you know, trying to provide that convenience. We look at it as we're competing with other OEMs in the automotive business, but we also know we're competing with everybody's last best experience, regardless of what that might be. And that's what we're trying to deliver with mobile service.
Was there, I mean, you probably needed a whole new kind of faction of the workforce then, too.
We did, yeah.
So you're providing more opportunities for employment, too.
That's right. So we've built up, and we have a program with our dealers where we'll support them in providing these experiences, because there was expense that had to go into this, and staffing that had to go into hire more techs for the vans, hire coordinators to schedule, et cetera. So, there is definitely more jobs created because of this.
So if you're somebody like me who tends to be on the more illiterate side of vehicles, I just love them. I love the tech. I don't know much about them. I wish I knew more. But if you're somebody like me going, I don't know, it's not starting. Nothing's working. What do I do? Call you guys up. You come out and you take a full autopsy of everything, right?
Yeah. And so this is, you know, mobile service is primarily for the maintenance and light repair events, right? If the vehicle's not going to start, we have a roadside assistance, which is separate to that. But yeah, this is your traditional maintenance. Maybe there's a light repair, you know, ding on the car, something that you need to be have done. We'll come out, inspect the vehicle, perform the service, and if we find something else, if we can't get it done that day, we'll make another trip back out or do the pickup and delivery that I spoke about.
So how did this come about? How did this start?
Well, you know, nod to our Lincoln brand, our luxury brand. Pickup and delivery started in 2016 with them as, again, a way to save customers time, right?
Yeah.
That value of time. We have some innovative dealers. We had some dealers doing mobile service as well on their own with the Ford brand. And, you know, it became an idea that we wanted to investigate. How do we save customers time? And it's also our retail customers, but it's also really important for our fleet and commercial customers. So if we can take care of their vehicles when their drivers are off the road, scheduled to be off the road, and keep those trucks running, there's livelihoods tied to the operation of the vehicles for our fleet and commercial customers. So it's a way to keep their uptime high and vehicles on the road at all times, and for our, you know, one-to-one customers, really make it convenient for them.
Where do you see this going into the future?
Yeah, we think there's some growth still to have with this. We the Net Promoter Score, the way we measure customer sentiment, you know, and the Net Promoter Score says, would you recommend this brand or dealer to others? You know, we see a big lift with mobile service, almost 10 points higher. So the customer feedback is awesome, and I think once customers experience it, they're going to continue to want the service, right? And that's where we see the continued growth is even in return customers and helping us to retain customers that maybe traditionally haven't come back to the dealerships, and even sell more vehicles because of it.
Yeah. What else are you guys working on?
Well, the next thing for us is really around the technology and being able to evolve that. So we're trying to provide providing our dealers with more tools to make it simpler. Obviously, all the vehicles with the software you mentioned are connected.
Yeah.
So it's leveraging that connected vehicle data and trying to get in front of. We know when a customer might need service, maybe before the customer knows it.
Right.
So that proactive outreach to schedule it proactively and make it even simpler for the customer.
Yeah. And it makes sense when you're reaching out to people. It makes you want to, like, if you're looking around at all different kinds of vehicles, we're like, well, that's a pretty good perk that Ford offers.
That's right. we view it as a definite value of being a Ford owner.
Yeah.
But we'll service all makes.
Oh, really?
We'll service competitive makes, for sure.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. It is an undeniable force.
About 10% of our mix is competitive make vehicles. So,
oh, interesting.
So, yeah. So we'll service those, make it easy for those customers too, right? We want to build relationships with our customers that are impactful and last.
Yeah, I was reading the story from Bozard Ford in St. Augustine, Florida.
Yeah.
They seem to have the most robust force of this operation, and it just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, Bozard Ford is our biggest operation. 46 vans in service. They do a phenomenal job. But we've got 2,000 dealers across the country doing mobile service,
sure.
And about 2,500 doing pickup and delivery. So we've got great coverage nationally across our dealer network. And like I said, Bozard's certainly a leader, but we've got a lot of shining examples.
What was it like? You mentioned fired this thing up in 2019. What was it like during the pandemic?
Well, I mean, we had all kinds of challenges
the
pandemic,
yeah.
Right? But I think, you know, customers were looking for those convenient services and you know, dealers
it feels
were
like it would
ways.
Be more on people's mind then at
100%,
that point, right?
And dealers were proactive in trying
right.
to provide that convenience for those customers that they were looking for. So
yeah, it's wonderful. And then the technology aspect of all of it too, right? It's going to evolve so much.
Yes.
Like it feels like we are on such a fast track where like what we're capable of today is great, but like what we're going to be capable of in 2 years
yeah.
is going to just be unbelievable. It's
going to accelerate faster and faster. And right. That's what we're really working hard on is the tools to make it easier for our dealers to operate. You know, it's one thing to operate an operation when you're contained within four walls, but now you're
sure.
talking about expanding to potentially every driveway in your sure. area, right? So
no pressure.
No pressure. So we've yeah. got, you know, route optimization and things we need to do to make that efficient for them and so that we can stay on schedule for our customers as well, too. So we'll try to sequence that out and schedule that. But, yeah, we're working on all those tools to make that even more efficient. For
yeah,
them.
It's wonderful stuff. And again, it makes the shopping process, it could tip the scales
yeah.
for a lot of folks.
That's right.
I you know, for me, it's like, busy running around kids, all the events and all kinds of stuff. I don't have time to get to the dealership to fix whatever, something even minuscule. You guys come out to me. That's a different story.
Yeah.
Complete game changer for a lot of folks.
This is all about saving time for the customer, right?
Yeah.
And just making it, like you said, easy and convenient to get service done. Everybody's going to need service at some point, whether it's a repair or maintenance. And we want to make that process easy. And
yeah,
simple.
Certainly. Todd Rayburn, really appreciate your time. Great to see you.
Yeah.
Love this program. Can't wait to hear more about it.
Yeah, thanks for the time. Great
yeah,
to be here.
Of course.
Thanks.
Coming up next on Focus with Paul W. Smith, we're going to talk about some new polling data that shows, boy, these races in the state of Michigan are tight, whether it's the Senate race, whether it's the race for governor here in the state of Michigan. It is very, very tight. New polling shows it, conducted by the Glengariff Group. We'll talk about that. But we are at the Detroit Auto Show, and here at the Ford Display, absolutely unbelievable. I can't wait for people to see this version of the auto show. I think people are going to be very, very pleased by what they see when this thing opens up to the public here in just a couple of days. Take a break. It's Focus with Paul W. Smith, Chris Renwick in this Wednesday afternoon. All right, here live from the Detroit Auto Show. At the Ford Display, we've been walking around checking things out. It is fantastic, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of great Broncos. There's a Sasquatch. All three of the big three have driving experiences.
Yep. And then they've got some really cool concept cars.
Yeah.
They've got
the Stars and Stripes for the 250th
on the
America's Birthday or whatever.
Yeah, for the new Corvette.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very cool. This is going to be a really cool auto show for people.
Yeah.
I think they're really going to like this.
And you know what? I was talking with some people around here. It feels like there's more of a buzz this year. Like last year was kind of, I don't want to say a reset year, but it was a new guard.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing things a little differently. And I feel like they found their footing, and there's a lot more there's a lot of excitement, and it also helps that they wisely moved back to January.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. Meanwhile, some new polling is out showing, boy, these races in the state of Michigan are very tight. There is some dissatisfaction with the way the economy is under Donald Trump in year one of his second term. Let's bring in WJR's Marie Osborne, the Director of Community Affairs and News, to talk about it all. Hi, Marie.
Hi there, Chris. So we're going to talk about this poll that was commissioned by the Detroit News and WDIV. So in a, let's start with the governor's race. In a three-way scenario, Congressman John James holds a narrow edge with Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson close behind and former Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan drawing support from more than a quarter of the respondents. When Duggan was not included in this, Benson moved ahead just slightly, underscoring how much his presence really reshapes the field. Now, heading over to the Senate race, Republican Mike Rogers and Democrat Haley Stevens are effectively tied in this race for the open U.S. Senate seat. This is according, again, to this new statewide survey. We're looking at 600 likely Michigan voters, and it found that 44% of them favored Rogers, 43.7 backed Stevens. That's a difference of less than a half of a percentage point. That falls within the poll's margin of error of 4 percentage points. Now, one of the biggest warning signs in all of this for Republicans is voter enthusiasm. The poll finds that motivated Democrats outnumbered highly motivated Republicans by a wide margin, and that's a shift from past cycles. Among those who say they're certain to vote, Benson opens up a small lead. The survey also highlights the political environment shaping the race, and that's for the governor. A majority of voters disapprove of President Trump's performance, while Governor Gretchen Whitmer remains unusually popular for a term-limited governor, and support that could help the Democratic nominee. And Chris, as you know, the governor has yet to endorse a candidate for governor.
Yeah, well, we just saw that Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist dropped out of the race. He's now going to run for Secretary of State. So that's certainly going to impact things a little bit, too. I think this poll, like you mentioned, it highlights Mike Duggan's impact here. It highlights, you know, where he's drawing his votes from. Now, this independent run is, you know, relatively unprecedented. And we haven't seen a major candidate like Mike Duggan decide to come in as an independent, and where that's going to have the most impact. You take him out of the race and Benson gets a little bit of a bump and a lead. And with him in the race, John James in the lead, all within the margin of error. It's very tight, but I think you see how much of an impact Mike Duggan is already having.
Right. And we got to remember it's really early in the year.
Yes,
okay. We're
sure.
January here. We're months away. And something else is earlier this week, we had some reporting on another survey. This was a national survey, but it talked to young voters, Gen X, Gen Zs, and most of them are starting to identify as independents. So that's interesting too, is that is the population really turning on this idea that, yeah, you know what, maybe I'm sick of the Democrats, I'm sick of the Republicans, I'm really more of an independent voter. And if that happens, then of course Mike Duggan can get a leg up here. But, you know, again, that's just some early national polling that we saw earlier in the week.
You know what's interesting too, I was watching Harry Enten on CNN, and he's kind of their data and analytics guy, and he was talking about, you go back 20 years or so, and voters who identified as conservative and voters who identified as liberal, Republican conservatives had a 22% lead in that margin of those who identified as conservatives and those who've identified as liberal. Now that lead has shrunk to just 7%. So you have more people identifying as liberal on the left side of things. So it does throw into whack a little bit when you consider how people are going to vote. And then you mentioned the motivation. It's Donald Trump, it has had the ability to motivate voters when he is on the ballot. We saw it in 16, we saw it in 20, and we saw it certainly in 2024. So without him on the ballot, though, it's been a mixed bag for Republicans.
Yeah, and that's clear for Mike Rogers here in Michigan. A lot of people, I know that we've interviewed people on the air, we've heard them say this, that, you know, that's a big question. Can Mike Rogers pull the votes in without Donald Trump at the top of the ticket? You know, energizing a voter base is like, it's all about that. We know that politics is all about money, but motivating the base and motivating voters is huge. Voter enthusiasm, and this is one of the things that they asked about in this survey, so I thought that was a good question for them to ask.
Yeah, and remember, Mike Rogers lost by, I think, 0.3%.
Yeah, close.
To Alyssa Slotkin. So, I mean, he was in that race up until the very end, and And again, I think the name recognition is much more tilted in Mike Rogers' favor, at least here in the state of Michigan, over Haley Stevens, even though she is a sitting congresswoman. So you do have that at play here, too, and then that's going to be just as close. Michigan is going to continue to be at the center of the political focus as we get towards November. There's no doubt.
Yep, and don't also forget that the Republicans poured a lot of money into Mike Rogers' campaign the last time, a lot. And I'm certain that's going to happen again. It remains to be seen how much of the national dollars, Democratic dollars, will go to Haley Stevens. We'll see.
Yeah, and like, you know, it's funny, too, because you talk about the pure politics of it, right? Obviously, the bases are going to remain the bases for the most part, right? If we're seeing a shift in independence, that's certainly going to play a role. But the consequential decisions, not only for the country at large that the president has on his plate now, but those are going to be amplified as we get closer. And I mean, every day we trudge towards November, those decisions in Venezuela, the decisions of Iran, the decisions of, you know, the view of the Epstein files, all of these things are going to be magnified tenfold this year.
Yep. And don't forget, yesterday, the president in his speech at the Econ Club talked about that word, affordability, which he said affordability is a made up word. It was made up by the Democrats. That's what he said in his speech. So we'll see how voters feel about that, too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Marie Osborne, thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Good to talk with you.
Yes.
Donald Trump yesterday was vintage Donald Trump. Right. That's what he does. It's what he is about. That's where he's gained the notoriety
right.
from. It's where he's picked up his base. But they made that a priority in 24.
Right.
Affordability. Making things more affordable for people so that when you go to the grocery store, you don't feel it.
It's all about the price of eggs, right?
In a nutshell, yes. But people aren't feeling that yet, and he's talked about this boom that could come this year. That's all well and good, but you gotta make sure people are feeling it
before 2026.
Before
or the election
before
November.
Yeah. And so I think all those decisions and those the how they frame it is going to be pretty consequential here this year. All right, we'll take a break. 1 o'clock hour coming up. It's Focus with Paul W. Smith. Well, it's good to have you here at the Detroit Auto Show. Everything opens to the public. January 17th, just in a few days, it is Media Day, today and tomorrow. I love it. It's so funny watching, like, the automotive media go in and just rip these cars apart.
Yeah.
I love it. And so
they're almost like kids.
Yeah, you know? It is. It's like opening a toy on Christmas or something. And then you've got all the staff here, the support staff that makes these things nice and clean and put them back together so that when you get here on the 17th, you're going to see the best version of these vehicles. And it's fantastic.
Imagine being the person who has to keep these carpets pristine.
It takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
It takes a village, as they would say.
That's right.
All the work that goes in behind the scenes to make this, to bring this thing to life is great. And we've seen the change in the industry with auto shows. It's been pretty apparent.
Right.
And what I love how the Detroit Auto Show is changing is it's interactive. It's, yes, you are going to see the cool concepts. Yes, you are going to see cars that you can take home with you from the dealership tomorrow.
Right.
If you want. But what you're also seeing are like what's happening right behind us with the Bronco experience. So you can get in a Bronco, drive it around. You don't get to drive around. You get to be driven
around.
And you get to feel what it's like. You get to feel the technology that's in it, the suspension, all the different variables that they put in to make this the best ride for a Bronco user.
Yeah, and look, I mean, even if you're bringing kids or you're bringing someone who's not necessarily interested in cars, there's a lot for them to do. I don't know, let's say you could play tug of war with Sasquatch, just for example.
I can confirm you can do that here.
I'm working on that video right now of Chris Renwick playing tug of war with Sasquatch here at the Detroit Auto Show.
I don't love that. I tried so hard, and he's got one hand
on
the rope. It's really not fair.
And I thought you got to at least keep the Bronco, but that has to stay here.
It's not – there's the picture. Look at me, just straining.
right.
to try to beat Sasquatch, I and thought there was no chance.
I
was set up for failure, quite frankly.
I thought we'd have to get a medic with with that machine where they go clear, boom, you know.
My Apple Watch was like, your heart is about to explode.
It just said, are you okay, LOL?
Do you need help? So R.I.P. it's great. It's one of the fun things about the outer show. And you're right. I mean, my kids would have an absolute field day here. So we're going to bring them down and show them all the – and they can get in and feel things. And if, for a family event, it's fantastic.
And you'll have a two-day head start, so you'll know exactly where to take them.
Know exactly where to go. I think I saw, like, a snow cone truck in the back there.
Yeah.
So we'll probably spend a significant amount of time there.
Luckily, it's in the back corner, so you can hit that last.
Yes, exactly right. But you're going to want to come down to see this because, yes, you can try the Bronco event. You can go down to Jeep's got a Wrangler track back there. There's another one in towards the back of Huntington Place. So a lot of interactive, a lot of ways for you to get involved, feel these vehicles, and see which one you like. Because the realities are you're going to need a new vehicle at some point.
Yeah.
At some point, you're going to need a new vehicle. And so why not come down here and check things out? No, you're probably not going to be able to get the concept car.
Right.
There are very few of us that can, Dave Rieger being one of them. But for the rest of us, we can't. And so you can check out the F-150s, you can check out the Broncos, and it's all going to be attainable.
Yeah, and there's a mix of those cool cars that you'll never see or you'll see in 5 to 10 years, and then there's actual cars that normal people, like you said, can drive out of the dealership. And the great thing is all three of our big auto companies, they have displays where you can actually ride in the cars here.
Yes, and what I love is the brands that are here, because – what we've seen from auto shows around the country is brands are pulling away.
Right.
And yes, there are less reveals that are taking place here than have traditionally. But that's because the OEMs say, well, we can have all the eyes on us if we do an event somewhere.
Right.
Like, we can take these vehicles, bring all the media together, or have all the media's eyes on just this reveal, and we get all the attention. So, again, things are changing, but there's a ton of brands here.
Right.
A ton.
Yeah, and ones that we have lost in years past are coming back.
Right.
And so that's why I'm saying it feels like there's a momentum to this year's show that we haven't felt in a while.
Then you go to the gallery.
Yeah.
And you want to oogle and and drool a little bit. That's where you go.
Yeah.
That's where the Lamborghinis and the Bentleys are and the Maseratis and brands that I can't even pronounce. So it's
right. And you speak Italian, so that's how exotic they are.
Grazie. Yeah. That's about all I got. That's about it. So you got to make sure you come out here. Meanwhile, Donald Trump was here yesterday.
Yeah.
He spoke at the Econ Club. He toured the F1 facility out at Rouge. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, again, I think that when you look at the upheaval in the industry, right, and he talked about a lot of stuff at the Econ meeting, but when you focus in on what the automotive industry has gone through the last year, right, or even the last few years, when you talk about all the different standards, all the different priorities of the Biden administration and how Donald Trump has changed it, you know, these companies have to stay nimble. They have to be able to change, not necessarily on a dime, but be willing to make the changes so that they fit in with what the priorities are at the governmental level, at the standard level. So I always thought from the get-go, with all the talk about electrification and the big push towards EVs, Ford always seemed to me to be in the best shape of the big three to be able to move around.
Right.
Right. They're not entrenched in one area. They've dabbled, and you see, you know, like the Mach-E, for example, very popular EV, and others, they've been able to kind of change on a dime.
Right, and, you know, there's regulations that get put in place, then there's regulations that get taken away. And it seems like Ford and all the other big automakers, especially here in town, you know, they're looking at that intermediate step. It's like, yes, eventually, one day, most of the vehicles, if not all, will be electric vehicles. But there's intermediate steps between now and then, and it seems like they're really finding that sweet spot right now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court yesterday hearing oral arguments on some transgender athlete cases, one out of Idaho, one out of West Virginia, and there's a ban. So these athletes, filed the lawsuit. Now it's in the Supreme Court. And it seems to me that this is not about bathrooms. It's not about locker rooms. It's about whether or not these bans are legitimate. And it seems like the justices are leaning towards this idea of, yes, they are, and they're going to keep these bans in.
Yeah, for a number of reasons. Number one, the Supreme Court normally likes to keep things narrowly focused on just the case at hand, except for Roe versus Wade. And it seems like, you know, they try to defer to the lower courts as much as they can, and that seems like it's what they're doing here.
Yeah, new polling shows the race for governor very tight here in the state of Michigan.
Yeah, and look, I mean, Duggan, the first polling I saw outside of Detroit, he was far, far behind. The fact that he's at 26% shows that he's made a lot of gains. Yeah.
He's made a lot of gains. But when you look at this polling,
yeah,
he makes an impact because it looks like he's taking votes from Jocelyn Benson, who is the leading Democrat currently.
Which a lot of Democrats were worried that's what was going to happen. He was going to split the vote and then let John James walk right in. And that looks like it's what's happening.
He's
here.
Got the lead, at least according to this poll, all within a margin, very, very small lead. Senator Jim Runstead joins us. Not only is he the senator, but he is also the chair of the Michigan GOP. We'll talk to him about Donald Trump's visit here to Detroit next, here on Focus with Paul W. Smith, Chris Renwick in this afternoon. All right, welcome back to the Auto Show. Chris Renwick in for Paul W. Smith this afternoon on Focus. It's good to have you here at the Ford display, and it's going to be a wonderful auto show. So when you get the opportunity to stroll in here on the 17th, I think you're going to really, really enjoy it. Meanwhile, Donald Trump was here yesterday. He was in town, spoke at Soundboard to the Detroit Economic Club. He also toured the Rouge plant where they make the F-150, and Jim Runstead joins us. Doubles as a state senator and the chair of the Michigan GOP. It's good to have you, Senator.
Always good to talk to you, Chris. Glad to be on.
So let's talk about Donald Trump's appearance yesterday. The president was in town. What did you make of his message to not only the Econ Club, but to voters here in the state?
I think he did a good job of outlining a lot of the misinformation out there. They're acting like the economy is not doing well. And he outlined all of these different increases and different categories from factory workers, construction workers, how much they have had in increase in their pay under Biden. I think it was a $3,000 loss in pay. And under him, it's somewhere between $1,000 to $4,000, depending on the category, an increase in pay since he took over. So pay has been going up. Inflation has been stabilized. Under Biden, it was 9%, a historic high in inflation. So the prices were set high, and now they've got inflation low, and the incomes are increasing. But that's just not getting out there among the media. I think one of the things they could look at is gas. I filled up yesterday at Costco was $2.44. I remember it was $5 a gallon under Biden. And so I think his messaging is good in terms of he's doing a lot of things to bring down inflation, bring down costs, make things affordable. He presented capping credit card interest rates at 10% and talked about they're sometimes over 30%, and it's usurious. But he said for the next year he would like to see that capped. Whether that can get through the Congress, I have no idea, but certainly those that are dealing with a lot of credit card debt would be helpful. So go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what he's talking about is going to be amplified this year because we're on a sprint to November for the midterms. You know, he talked about tariffs a lot. He's talked about how it's his favorite word, but he's backed off some of the automotive tariffs as well. He's been working with the big three. He's been working with a lot of companies to try to not only bring manufacturing back to the United States, but exporting vehicles to countries where traditionally they have not been able to sell. So he is opening up new markets, but there does still feel like a time of transition to a certain degree.
Oh, it's going to be. I always, when I get interviewed and they talk about the economy and I explain how the media presents it as a canoe. You put the new person in the canoe and they paddle one way or the other and it switches. No, it's like a battleship. Moving the economy, you know, where it takes 20 miles to turn the battleship, That's what you're talking about, the economy. It's incremental changes. It's not going to change instantaneously. He never said day one, you know, all these things are going to happen. He said he's going to work on them day one and start making these changes. And he is making these changes. So it's going to take some time. You're absolutely correct on the tariffs. He'll say, I'm doing these kind of tariffs. He sees what the results are. He gets a lot of information. He pulls back parts of it. But we want to onshore as many jobs into America, particularly into Michigan, as we possibly can. For decades, the Congress and the presidents have offshored, happily offshored, hundreds of thousands of jobs here from Michigan and across the country. That needs to be reversed. We need to bring manufacturing back here. And that does require tariffs. And there are many situations in talking with the automotive industry that they said it's not just that they put an extra tax on. They'll say if you don't have the right color light, they'll make it illegal. So you got to change all the lights and stuff like this so that are unaffordable. And they do that to make your cars illegal in their country. So there's a lot of this anti-free market stuff that's going on with these other countries. And we simply have to equalize the playing field in order to make our vehicles marketable.
What did you make of this interaction he had with a Ford employee yesterday when he was on the tour of the Rouge plant where they make the F-150? I think it was he was called a pedophile protector in connection to the Epstein case. And then Donald Trump said a couple things, made a couple of gestures, and then walked away. What did you make of that?
You know, I know what it's like to be called names. I've been called you name it. There's not one thing I have not been called in politics.
You? No.
Oh my God! And I've been in office for 20 years. I've been through some of the nastiest campaigns. One of them was the nastiest I've ever heard of. Oh, there's not. I don't think there's anything I haven't been called. Maybe I don't think I was called a pedophile, but other than that, everything under the sun. And yes, it's very frustrating, but. I really believe, and I learned this long ago, Winston Churchill said, if you turn and address every barking dog down the road, you'll never get down the road. And so I just let those things go to the best of my ability. But sometimes, I mean, being called a pedophile is so despicable. I can understand his emotional reaction, but you got to let those things go. No matter what it is, you just move on.
Is there a concern on some of the poll numbers that you've seen? Glenn Gariff just put out a poll commissioned by the Detroit News. You know, there are still some people that feel a little skittish about where the economy is right now. Why do you think Michigan voters feel that way, or do you not put a lot of stock into what those polls are saying?
No, I do put some stock into it because the inflation has increased the prices so much more than incomes under Biden, and people are still living with that. And so you incrementally, these, as I outlined and as the president outlined, what kind of increases in pay there has been. But because of these massive, you know, 9% inflation, the overall costs have went up. And so you got to, they got to match. We got to keep the inflation low and keep the growth in the economy and keep those wages going up. And that all takes time. I think it will get there in this year. I think we're going to see a lot more advancing. But my biggest concern of all is Republican turnout. And you look at the previous elections, the last several months where we didn't do well, it was 100%. When you parse the numbers, 100%, the Republicans didn't turn out. The Democrats did. The Republicans didn't.
Well, then how do you motivate voters in the state then? What is the Michigan GOP going to do?
I'm going to let them know what this means. I mean, could you imagine if a Kamala Harris, this is me talking to them, had won? I mean, we would have completely open borders. It wouldn't be, they were lying about it being 10 million at the border. The state, local, and federal officers told me it was 40 million people that went through, 40 million people coming through unvetted, unchecked, criminals. How does that help the country? It beats down working class wages because it's not, you know, your PhD rocket scientists and politicians who are competing with the illegal labor. It's working class people getting their wages down. Who supports this? The Democrats do. All of this woke stuff, the boys going in the girls' shower, nobody, it's 80% of the people don't support this stuff. the boys taking all of the girls' records and scholarships and breaking bones in sports. Nobody's, only the hardcore Dems support this stuff. But this is what we'll get if we do not activate in this election and start getting out and making a difference. We're going to have all this woke crap, open border, flooding the nation, destroying wages. It'll be a catastrophe. So that's going to be my message to the Republicans.
Senator, Mr. Chairman, I feel like we could talk for an hour, but unfortunately, we got to go. I appreciate you stopping by. Thanks for your time, as always. We'll talk again soon.
Absolutely, Chris. Thanks.
Yep, you got it. That is Senator Jim Runstead, chair of the Michigan GOP. We'll take a break live here from the Detroit Auto Show at the beautiful Ford stand. You're going to want to see it. Believe me, when this opens in a few days, you're going to absolutely love it. Chris Renwick in for Paul W. Smith here on Focus this Wednesday afternoon. Well, I'll tell you, it feels like what's happening in Iran has reached a fever pitch. There is certainly an inflection point happening there. And pushing back against a regime, I mean, you're talking about a public hanging of one of the protesters carried out by the regime. And it's unfathomable considering where the United States' relationship with Iran historically has been, going all the way back to when they took the hostages in, what, 79? So the history is long, and it feels like there's an inflection point. Donald Trump has said that help is on the way. He's told those protesters there. There was reports today that there was some movement amongst military members in the region moving around to different bases. So it feels like something is coming, but the question is what? What exactly is on the table here for Donald Trump? We bring in Rocky Richkovsky, the retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army, to talk about it all. Rock, good to have you, my friend.
Hey, Chris. Great to be on with you in Focus.
All right. So let's break this down. It seemed like over the last couple of days, the reports kind of leaned toward the fact that Donald Trump had been briefed on options, on what to do. And, you know, you go back to Operation Midnight Hammer when he had these stealth bombers flying from the middle of the United States all the way over to Iran to carry out these attacks on the nuclear facilities. An unbelievable feat of the U.S. military's might. But at the same time, the increase in hostilities in Iran is changing things a little bit. So of the options here for the United States, what do you think Donald Trump is leaning towards?
Well, first off, Chris, let me just share with you that I truly believe that we're within 24 to 48 hours of playing some type of role in assisting the Iranian protesters against this current regime. I really believe that all the tea leaves are out there. Now, the president can pick from kinetic, which would be military options without putting boots on the ground, all the way to non-kinetic strategic options, which would include economic and financial warfare. So when you look at the kinetic options, we're talking about precision airstrikes, missile strikes against their military facilities, against any other leftover nuclear facilities, ballistic missile infrastructure facilities, as well as the IRGC, which is the Iranian Republican Guard, their real secret police and their military operations units, their special operations units. We would potentially help the protesters by taking out their command and control nodes and any of their air defense systems, as well as any drone capability that they have, drone operations, and their missile production sites. Now, when you talk about non-kinetic, you're talking about covert and intelligence-based operations, which are actually covered under Title 50 of the U.S. Code. And these are the black ops operations. These are the cyber operations. These are employing Elon Musk and U.S. assets, military assets, to allow for people to have internet operations. Also, kind of like the Voice of America. Remember the old Cold War Voice of America? This would also include psychological operations, broadcasting and social media campaigns, exposing the regime's corruption to the world, and most importantly, cutting off their financial operations so that they can't fund their military, they can't fund any type of other operations, and you cut off their illicit crypto and shadow banking operations. And we have that power.
Okay, so if we're in a two-day window in your mind, what does that mean for our assets in the region? What does it mean for our men and women who are stationed there?
Well, you would obviously pull back and harden your bases that we have. We have quite a few bases in Iraq as well as operational in Syria. So you would harden those bases. And any of our naval facilities, naval operations would be hardened, which means that they would be on alert and obviously in a offensive as well as defensive posture. And then on top of that, we would basically launch, and this isn't anything classified, but we would launch satellites and other technical operations that we have in the air as well as in space to jam Iranian capabilities and communications, as well as to put out more of our communications on the ground. And that would really, really create a bad day for the regime, because they would not be able to communicate with the ground, and they would be hearing opposition communications. And that's what our forces are preparing to do with either drones or with cyber and satellite operations.
Does Israel have a role here? There were reports that Marco Rubio was talking to Benjamin Netanyahu a couple of days ago. So it seems like, as you mentioned, the wheels are in motion, could be a couple of days away from some sort of intervention. What type of role would Israel play? Because there's been a lot done to try to bring some sort of stability to the region, right? Obviously, we've seen that with Israel and Gaza. Yeah. But what does this change if the United States were to take some action?
Yeah, that's probably one of the best questions that I've heard right now. And so that people understand, Israel actually has more assets on the ground in Iran. And the Iranian people, if you were talking about pre-79 revolution, the Iranian people always had a great relationship, believe it or not, with Israel. There are even Iranian Jewish groups. So it's very interesting. But Israel has assets on the ground. And I'm sure that Shin Bet or the Mossad have assets on the ground that are providing intelligence. And that's what we're talking about. But as far as Israel being covertly or overtly involved, I think that they would probably have a seat on the sidelines and allow the U.S. to lead this. And quite frankly, when you're thinking about what's happening, and you're absolutely correct that there are now, we've seen the pictures that have been smuggled out of the body bags on the ground. But now they're talking over 2,500 people have been killed, and you're hearing chants instead of death to the USA. Now you're hearing long live the USA and death to the Ayatollah, as he's imposing capital punishment now and executions.
Yeah, and then there's been this reaction from those on the inside, whether that's been protesters here in the United States, that feel like the people on the left that have been protesting, whether it was happening in Gaza or other, you know, liberal issues, that they've been relatively silent on this. Is that an indictment, do you think?
I wish I knew the real answer there. I think that it's who is funding the protests in the United States, not so much an indictment, but more of, we really need to get the mud out of our eyes and look, or the sand out of our eyes, and look at who is funding these protests and really get down to that. Because you're right, there were groups that were protesting Gaza, protesting Venezuelan activity, but yet they're not protesting what's happening in Iran right now. And the bottom line is a strategic reality check for this president. And seriously, could damage Iranian capabilities without putting boots on the ground, as well as create a better relationship with the United States and Iran moving forward.
Interesting stuff. Great analysis. Rocky Richkovsky, I always appreciate the time, my friend. Thanks so much.
God bless you, and I'll see you on Friday night, my friend. Take care.
See you on Friday night. Meanwhile, we're going to take a break. Coming up on the other side, we're going to talk to the president of Michigan State University. We just saw Kevin Guskowitz roll by.
If we can get him off the Broncos, yes.
If we can get him off the attractions here, we'll talk to him. He had a conversation, a little fireside chat with former Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, so hopefully we'll be able to catch up with him. Ryan Armani in the house. We'll get ready to hand the ball off to him as well. All that and more coming up here on Focus with Paul W. Smith. Chris Renwick in here at the Detroit Auto Show. All right, welcome back. Can't believe we're at the end of the show already. Time flies here at the Detroit Auto Show. It's a ton of fun. And when this opens up to the general public on the 17th, you are going to enjoy it. Somebody else who's enjoying his time is the president of Michigan State University, Kevin Guskowitz. You just got off the Bronco experience here.
I just went up the mountain there. It was awesome.
It's a little more daunting once you get to the top, isn't it?
I felt like I was back at Cedar Point amusement park.
Yeah. Yeah, so you had a nice little fireside chat with former Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg today.
We did. That was a lot of fun. We talked about the importance of higher education and research universities like Michigan State and the important work in working to help advance technologies around mobility. And he's an expert in this given his previous experience, but it was a lot of fun.
Well, and there has been a ton of research development done on campus. I mean, the different buses that are online now, the autonomous buses, all that, it's all happening up in East Lansing.
It is. I mean, and across the state. I mean, I think as we, you know, coming here 2 years ago, I knew that the automobile industry was a sort of an anchor institution industry for the state. But I've seen that time and time again in my 2 years, and just proud that Michigan State's playing a major role in it.
Yeah. You've been very busy. Things are it's a vibe up in East Lansing lately. You know, you bring in Pat Fitzgerald, which has got to be just such a thrill.
A lot of energy, as I've told people. Coach Fitz, as he likes to be called, yeah, is probably as close to Coach Izzo that we're going to see walking a sideline of a football game. And there's a lot of synergy there. He's bringing a lot of energy and put together a great staff. He's out recruiting right now. But I think it'll be an exciting fall in East Lansing with Spartan football.
And, you know, the basketball team gets a big win the other night.
I know Coach would say we got off to a slow start last night, but ended up with, I think, a 21-point victory. And Coach is incredible, as you know.
Yeah.
And but yeah, before you know it, we'll be March Madness. I'll be here. It's just around the corner.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I know you're busy. I know you got to run. I just appreciate you stopping by, saying hi.
Thank you
so much.
Appreciate you having me
on.
Yeah,
you got it.
All
that
right.
Is the president of Michigan State University, Kevin Guskowitz, here at the Auto Show. Fantastic time. All put on by Mich Auto, the wonderful work that Glenn Stevens and his team do as well. And I can't believe how quickly 2 hours goes by.
I know.
I can't believe it. We've had so much fun here today. Ryan Armani's coming up. What's up, dude?
How do you want me to follow that up? I mean, the president of Michigan State University, I gotta follow up.
Well,
here,
there's only one person to follow it up, and it's you. You're here. What's
how you
going
doing,
on?
My man?
I'm good.
It is so great to see you. You know, because of the schedules.
I know.
We actually met in person for the first time at our little holiday party at the station. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, hey, Chris, I'm Ryan.
It's unbelievable. I'm usually comatose by, like, 9:45.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Incredible, but I'm doing great. The show looks amazing.
It's awesome.
And, you know, what is this, the second year since it's come back to January?
Yeah.
And it does feel like we've
it's
got
like
some momentum
yeah.
now again. Last year, you know, no disrespect at all, but – you know, first year back in January, it was almost like kind of a rebirth. And then now it's like, let's go.
I love kind of this new tag of there's only one Motor City.
That's right.
It's true. And what I love about this is the industry has changed. Mm-hmm. The auto industry has changed. But the industry of automotive shows have changed.
No doubt.
And so, you know, you've got the Bronco experience, Wrangler and all this stuff. It's interactive. It's hands-on. It's you can actually feel what it's like to then go out and buy one of these cars and go, yeah, I know what it is.
That is one of the, I think, biggest attractions as to what sets this auto show apart from some of the others around the country. It is the interactive experiences. I mean, we're right outside the Bronco experience. You've got the Detroit Grand Prix
yep.
over there. You've got some other areas of this footprint that you can get in the car and drive it.
Yeah.
You can go on the off-road here for the
yeah.
Bronco. We saw a couple of people doing that. So I think this is absolutely fantastic and worth the price of admission.
You know what I also love about Media Days, too, is you get all of these, like, these real auto reporters coming
yeah.
in, and they're just ripping these cars apart.
Right.
I was watching a guy just pull the tailgate down, shaking the whole truck. It was crazy.
I envy that guy. You know what I mean?
Right, could you imagine if we went up to the F-150 and just started torquing on the side mirror?
That old doo-doo-doo-doo. Yeah. Car alarm would have
yeah.
went off.
There are
we'll be escorted out of the building.
Right, there are so many things I know how to do, and
one of those things is to know my limitations. And I cannot do anything around a car other than put gas in it.
Yeah.
And I like the way it looks in it. And if it drives well, but that's part of it. I mean, you've got these gearheads. They come in here. They examine every part of the car. They know exactly what they're looking at. And it's almost like a little bit of a biology class on a car.
Yeah. And then you've got the crews come behind them, put everything back together.
Right.
It's like when my kids drop one of their Lego sets. I'm the one that has to put everything back together. Yeah, but it's absolutely fantastic. And I think people are going to love this show. There's so much to do, so much to see. I don't know. I went and played Tug of War with Sasquatch Lost.
That video is up on our Facebook and Instagram page,
oh, good.
By the way.
It is
very
funny
good.
You say that because not only inside of Huntington Place, but along the main corridor there on the outside, there's so many different exhibits and so many different booths that you can get information on just about anything in the area and different workplaces, different technology, different schools if you are interested. You know, we talked about it on the show and probably mentioned it again. You know, I think the Ford, we are here at Ford, and they talked about how they had 5,000 jobs open for six figures for mechanics around the country, and they can't fill them. That's a good problem to have. That is more jobs. If you are interested in learning how to do that job, I mean, there's a booth out there for you. You know, if that's something you want to be trained in. So this, you can't beat it. It's Detroit. It's the Motor City, and it is the place to be. It is the birthplace of the automobile.
There's also the gallery back here, which is if you want to go drool at the Lamborghinis and the Bentleys and all that stuff. And then there's some brands you can't pronounce. So I'm
you're quizzing me.
I'm going to put Mike on the spot. I've marked down a couple of different brands.
Do we know the right? Good. Do we know the right answer?
Nope. So we're just going to let it ride. Here, I want you to start with the first one that I've marked off.
Good.
How do you pronounce that name?
Koenigsegg?
Okay, don't know.
That's coffee, right?
That it's Keurig.
Right.
No. The next one?
Pagani, that's a sandwich.
Okay.
Bugatti?
Panini. Okay, the next one?
Pininfarina.
Okay.
Yeah.
It sounds great.
Text us and let me know if I get it right, because we have no way. None of us know.
I'm going to say no, is what
I'm
going to
guess
say.
That way, too.
What do you got coming up today?
We're really excited today. We're going to talk, obviously, so much of the focus is going to be about the auto show, what people can expect, what people want to see, what's new here this year. And we'll also, look, this is an election year, and this is a place that everybody is going to want to be seen over the next couple of days. So we'll talk to State Senator Mallory McMorrow. She's going to join us running for that U.S. Senate seat.
We did see Jocelyn Benson trolling around earlier,
too.
Everybody's going to be here.
Yep.
That is Ryan Armani. He is coming up next here from the Detroit Auto Show at this beautiful Ford setup. It's been a lot of fun hanging out with you today, Michael.
Yeah, let's do it again tomorrow.
We'll do it again tomorrow. That's going to do it for us. Have yourself a wonderful rest of your Wednesday. Ryan Armani and JR Afternoon coming your way next.